The world we live in can be a strange place, and usually even stranger through the eyes of a magician. Join Peter Nardi and Mark Spellman for their laid-back, no-holds-barred chat about the news, life, movies, in fact, who knows what they will talk about. Grab a drink, buckle up, and get ready for Wizards, Whiskey, and Waffle.
Right, happy Tuesday, everybody. It is now actually Tuesday morning. We are recording this. We didn't think we were going to have one this week because we're both extremely busy, but Mark has taken a break from his filming and he is here to join us. Marcus.
Hello, good morning. What was it, 10:50, 10:30? Good morning, mid-morning.
Yeah. And
everybody, how are you?
I'm really good, and this is going to be a tight one today, so we got to keep it to 40 minutes because I've got a go edit it. I know you've got to go back. I'm editing footage for a friend of mine. Plus, I've got an Alakazam live at 2 o'clock on Facebook. Then we're doing an Alakazam Academy tonight, which is a online tutorial thing for magicians. So it's a really busy day.
Yeah, I've got my what have I got? I've got to finish filming and editing a couple of little bits. Then my yoga and then my crochet class, something I've just been doing in lockdown. But yeah, so that's it really. So just a bit of that, you know, and I'm making some jam later on.
And making some jam, very nice. Yeah. What flavour?
I'm not really, that's a complete lie. I'm not making any jam.
Disappointing. Really disappointing.
I was hoping for a little jar. Spellman's jam.
So
go on. How are we getting on with Spiros? What's happening there?
Right. So I spoke to Spiros. Spiros said he will happily join us on the podcast. Like, right. I said, I think it's gonna go over to two episodes because it's such a fascinating story. I haven't set a date with him yet, but what we'll do later on today, and the problem is neither of us really know when we're gonna have the time to record these, and we need to set a date between us so we can give it a Spiros. So later on today, me and you will decide on a date that we're going to record either later on this week or early next week, and I'll hit Spiros up with some dates and we'll get him booked.
So should we book in a meeting with Spiros?
100%. And I've made Brilliant. A note of all those meetings. So we can do that. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting him on because it is a fascinating story that I think everyone's going to absolutely love. And I know I've heard the story from start to finish twice, and I would go and watch his show again. You know, it's really good, and it is so interesting the lengths he went to. But we're not going to go into that now. We will about it as and when we do it.
We'll let the experts tell everyone the amazing story.
Yeah.
So last time we spoke about conspiracy theories, you mentioned the Kevin Spacey thing. And I did go and I looked it up, and there is certainly, it all seems, I mean, he's a strange character, obviously. You know, he's got
Did you watch the video?
Yes.
It's weird, isn't it? Because he's talking about a character, but it's sort of reflecting real life, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, who knows what sort of state of mind he is in, considering the kind of, you know, the career dive that he's now faced. Because, you know, despite everything, he is a very talented actor. You know, he's a brilliant actor, you know, but I don't know. I mean, what would happen if someone took magic away from you? Imagine, like, you know, you've been caught, I don't know, farting or something in public, and they say, oh, it's disgusting, and Peter Nardi is never going to do magic again. And they took magic away from you. It must do something. You know, you'd be lost. And I think, in a way, maybe that weird sort of odd video clip, maybe that's just him.
Yeah. Well, you never know. You never know.
You don't know. Do you remember Poltergeist?
Yes.
Obviously, classic. You know, obviously a brilliant film. That first film was shrouded. Well, actually, not the first film, the series of films. Because the little girl that played Carol Ann,
Yep.
you know, she, you know, sort of passed away really sadly at a very young age. I think she did Poltergeist, was there two, and then I think there's a third. Yeah. I don't know that she was in the third.
She actually passed away halfway through. So if you see the last final scenes, you never really see her face. She's being carried by her dad and stuff like that, and you're seeing the back of her head.
Okay.
Basically.
So, yeah. So like the whole sort of conspiracy theory. So, like around Poltergeist, there is this conspiracy theory that, you know, like, because it was based upon obviously a topic of the paranormal. There were people that were saying that because the little son in the film as well also passed away at a young age. And the lady that comes in, you know, the really small lady that comes in to kind of direct Caroline, right? She passed away as well, not that long after filming. So there was this whole thing about, you know, is the film cursed? Which is obviously a form of conspiracy.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but my thoughts on things like that are, if you looked at actors in lots of films, you know, if you focus in on one film and kind of go, oh, you know, but three of the main characters have passed away in that film.
Yeah.
Which is obviously tragic, it's terribly sad, obviously. But if you then looked at another film that's, I don't know, a comedy, you know, but, well, three people in that film passed away, you know, relatively young or whatever, but because it's not themed around the paranormal, no one, oh, no, that doesn't fit. Do you know what I'm saying? It doesn't criteria for the conspiracy.
Well, I told you, I watched a program on, there's a channel on, I think it's Amazon Prime. You've got to subscribe to it separately. It's called Shudder. And there was a program that was, I think it's on Shudder, and it is about these. It's about cursed movies, and they look into them. And Poltergeist was one of them, obviously, because that's one of the most famous ones. And then they break it down. But there was also The Crow on there, which was the one where, was it Jason Lee got shot?
No, Brandon Lee.
Got shot, yeah, and so they talk about that. They talk about, you know, how it happened and everything else. But they cover a lot of these movies. And
did you remember the Twilight? Did you tell me about the Twilight Zone?
Yeah, I told you the Twilight Zone, and that's where I learned it from.
After you said that in one of the last podcasts, I went and watched that, and that you just, oh my god, that's terrible, like terrible, it, what it's, happened,
and the fact that the footage is still in the movie.
I know. That's the weird thing. Surely, like, you just go, you know, we've got to just, it's got to be rewritten or something's got to happen. But apparently in like Ben-Hur as well, there was a tragic accident. One of the guys on the chariots passed away. Multiple horses apparently died in the original Ben-Hur in the filming of that, you know. And then you got things like Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Where... Is it a cow or a bull or something that they kill? I can't remember what they kill, but it's real. It's, you know, and it, you just think, geez, you just wouldn't get away with that now. You just couldn't do it. You know, but the other one as well that was a real conspiracy theory for a while, and I remember this sending shivers down my spine, was Three Men and a Baby. Do you remember Three Men and a Baby?
With the little person that appears
the little
off
boy
camera.
Behind the curtain. Yeah, behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And I remember someone saying, like, it, you know, this is long before the internet.
And this is a comedy as well. This is a comedy,
Three Men and a Baby. And they say, you know, the directors or someone, one of the producers or the directors, their son had passed away sort of at a young age, and you see him in this clip. And I remember reading it. I don't know where I heard about this, but this was long before the internet. It might have been at the very infancy of the internet, actually. And then I remember just finding this, just going, oh, apparently you've got to watch this clip. And I'm going through the whole of the film looking for this scene. But it never really specified what the scene was. And then eventually I spotted, and, you know, VHS or whatever it was, DVD, like dodgy old DVDs.
Yeah.
And just seeing it and the hairs on the back of my head, oh my God, behind a curtain. But then when you look at it, you can sort of see that it looks like, when you really analyse it, it does look like it's a some sort of a cutout or something. I don't know what it was. I don't know what the purpose was. I still don't understand why.
But a lot of these things, you know, sort of, because you've sort of been around TV and everything, there are continuity issues. So that could have been anywhere. I mean, look at Game of Thrones. You would not expect it to happen today, but one of the big scenes where we're having a banquet and someone's got a Starbucks cup on the table. But it does happen.
How do you know that they don't have a Starbucks?
Well, that's true.
They might do.
Ye olde Starbucks.
Yeah, they might have a Starbucks.
And that there's there's a clip at the end as well where they're all sitting there and they're deciding who the king is or the new king's going to be on Game of Thrones. And while they're sitting there, a couple of the actors have got water bottles.
Have they?
Yeah, yeah. And it's
I remember that last scene. I'll have to look it up. I have to look for that bloopers.
But well, continuity is a really weird thing. I mean, for those of you that don't know, you know, a lot about filming and everything else, whenever you see these little blooper reels and they say, you know, oh, look at her hair, it was parted on the left and that's parted on the right, that's what we call continuity. So it's where they've stopped filming and then the actor goes in. So you'll usually see, if you see an actor smoking a cigarette during a film, you'll see that the cigarette will change in length. So it will go down, it will go up and everything else. And it's purely because they've cut the scene or they're refilming. And they know he's got a cigarette in his hand, but, you know, how on earth are you going to get it to exactly the same point? Yeah,
exactly. And you imagine how much filming they do. It's the same with glasses as well. You'll see that there's a glass of wine, and then in the faraway shot, it's now half empty. Then they cut back again to the close-up, and it's full up again. And that's just multiple different takes. But, okay, so on to obviously, the biggest – well, there's two really big conspiracy theories.
Mm.
Right. Well, there's loads. But
there are hundreds.
There are loads. Okay, so all right. So things like, let's go with something really moon landing obviously is, you know, a big one. That the moon landing is massive, right?
Yeah.
Then you've got things like the Bermuda Triangle, which is another one, right?
Well, I will say, after, because you mentioned the moon landing last week, I think.
Yeah.
And I watched a video on it about the moon landing and reasons why it's not fake.
Okay. So this would be interesting because the documentary I looked after the podcast, I did as well. And I was trying to find the link for you for that. That is an hour-long thing. It was on like American television, proper broadcast. It wasn't like someone's done it on YouTube. This was like back in the day, and I have got it on VHS somewhere, like, you know, somewhere, God knows where. But it was a proper hour and a bit, I think it was, documentary about whether or not the moon landing was faked or not. So I'm going to throw a couple of let me give you my stance.
And then throw some questions at me because I can't really, I'll try and remember what the answers to them were because they picked apart all the conspiracy theories, the bits where people were going this, this, and this. The other thing was as well, which was a bit strange, is when I was searching YouTube, I couldn't find any about the conspiracy theory, only debunking it. Now, that's a conspiracy theory.
In itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you never know. I mean, these things are police. You know, of course they're police. You know, they take down videos that obviously shouldn't be up there because they're violent or whatever, you know, offensive or deeply offensive sort of things get removed. So, obviously, they're police. And if you think about, like, I mean, I did someone asked me if I would edit a birthday little video for a friend of ours very recently, Mel, who is the voice of Ed. And you put that up on YouTube and it had a couple of bits of music from a bit of Coldplay, a bit of this, but I used tiny bits.
Yeah, yeah.
And people are talking over the top of it. And even then, that still comes back flagged. But instantly, and you think, oh God, their algorithms or their systems are incredible. I mean, like, there's talking over the top of it as well. So this could be like in the background of a party or something, but it's still picked out Coldplay's Paradise.
Yeah.
And flagged it straight away. So obviously these videos are police. They are, you know, so if they can police sounds like copyright protected music, then they must be able to copyright vocal, like, well, sound. So if you're talking about conspiracy, moon landing, faked, you know, maybe that's the thing of this video has been taken down or, you know, whatever. It just kind of gets pushed right at the back end.
Yeah.
So it's almost impossible to find. But this documentary was really well done. Now, my stance on the moon landing is that I do believe we went to the moon. So I think it would be, if you sort of said, we never went to the moon. Well, now they can send, you know, satellite thingies to, you know, like Mars and stuff and get it to land and things. So they'd be able to send a high definition camera up to the moon. And the Russians would have done this ages ago. And gone, it was a lie, they didn't land on the moon. There's no flag, there's no evidence at all of them ever landing on that moon. And there would still be items that are there from the moon landing, because they didn't take it all back. Yeah. You know, a lot of these things were left there. So I think to say that we never were there, well, then it would just be this dusty moon with nothing on it. And that would be so easy to prove, and the Russians would absolutely jump all over that. Or anybody who was anti-American would jump all over that and totally destroy the notion that the Americans were first to land there.
Yeah.
It would almost be, it would be done. It would be no hesitation in revealing that information at all. You know, just totally debunk the Americans for not ever being there.
Yeah, of course.
My sort of theory, though, is, so there's some really interesting things. On this documentary, there was one thing that they said, that the footage, obviously being in black and white, very grainy video footage.
Yeah.
But the photographs were incredible. Like, absolutely, like, you couldn't take a better picture of an astronaut with the Earth behind him on these sort of iconic photographs. So they were saying things like, but these are chest-mounted cameras that are within protected domes and stuff, like, you know. And I guess, you know, obviously you could say they took hundreds of photographs and only the best five were chosen. There might be loads of duds. So you can kind of counter-argue that point. But there was one thing that they said, and that is that when you speed up the footage, like, I can't remember how much you speed it up by, but when you speed up the footage of the astronauts walking around the moon's surface, it looks like they're just walking. So there's this whole sort of notion that to create that illusion of anti-gravity, that they've actually just slowed the footage down a fraction, and it just creates this feeling of zero gravity in some of the footage that you see of them moving. They also say that the surface is very sandy. It just looks, and obviously it's black and white, so it just looks very sandy. So there is this notion that Area 51, reason why you cannot go fly or go anywhere near Area 51 is that Area 51, part of Area 51,
is the backdrop.
Is the backdrop. And in this documentary, they've got photographs and video footage of areas getting as close to Area 51 as possible, and they match some of the terrain, the mountains in the background. So not mountains, but some of the hills and the sort of, you know, whatever, with the background of the moon landing. Now, if you imagine being in the middle of the Nevada desert, pitch black at night, you'd have essentially a very discreet private location to create this footage.
Yeah.
And then you just say no one can ever go there again. And Area 51 is that. It's like you can never ever go there. You can't. You go anywhere near it, and immediately you've got the blacked out car come down with the blacked out windows, and you get the helicopters flying over with the thing saying that you are in a restricted area. So there is that. There is that element as well. And you sort of think, well, that could be plausible, because if you said, where could that footage be filmed? What would be a really good sort of replica for the moon's surface and, you know, how it might feel and look on the moon, you kind of would go maybe in a desert.
No, 100%. And right. The thing is, there was something I was watching the other day, and I don't know if it was that thing I was watching about debunking it, but I think a lot of people believe that the actual footage was filmed by Stanley Kubrick over here in the UK.
Yeah, so there is that conspiracy as well, which I don't know that they never touched on that in this documentary. They touched on the fact that, you know, Area 51, the Nevada desert, would make an extremely fantastic location to film this. You wouldn't have to mimic it in a studio.
Yeah.
And also they say that when you look at, what was the other thing? Oh, that's it. The flag. So the flag gets put in the ground and you see the astronaut struggles with putting the flag into the ground because the flag appears to be blowing in the wind. And on the surface of the moon, there is no atmosphere.
They did come up with a reason for that. And I think if you watch the footage, I mean, I presume I was watching the real footage. They said that there's a bar inserted into the flag to hold it.
Yeah, there is,
up.
But it does. But it's still
blowing.
It does blow. You sort of go, yeah, but that still is blowing. I get that because they do that with flags anyway. When they're putting flags out, because a lot of the time, if there's no atmosphere, or, you know, if you're putting a flag up and you're in Las Vegas and there's no wind or whatever, you know, that flag will just hang down. It'll just be hanging, you know, whereas the idea with a flag, you want it to fly the flag. So what they do is they put a rod or a piece of wire in it to hold it out so that you can see what that flag is.
Yeah.
So that's, I totally get that, but it does look like it's blowing.
Well, the other thing, just quickly, with the Stanley Kubrick thing, there's they started looking at some other Stanley Kubrick films, and they were saying that if you watch those films, there are, I'm trying to think, like I watched a few conspiracy theory things, so I hope I'm not getting these mixed up, but there are little nods to suggest that he had something to do with the video.
Well, there was a film, is it Capricorn 1 or something like that? Is that the film? But there's a film where they land, apparently they're landing on Mars or something, and it's all faked and filmed in a studio, and they're saying that is someone sort of going, because I do think, just to reestablish my point, I do think we landed on the moon. I do think that happened. But I do think, imagine, you're going to a place that no man has ever gone to before, and you're going to beam live footage from there back to Earth. One, I don't know how credible that was to send those signals that far for televised signals back in the early 60s.
Yeah, I mean, we're only in Ashford and we get a terrible TV reception.
Do you see what I'm saying? So that feels a little bit, you know, but so imagine they just thought there's no way that we could ever, broadcast this footage, but we want to. Or I sort of lean towards, imagine they did have capabilities to broadcast from the surface of the moon back to Earth, which is a long distance, especially for the time. But imagine they could. Imagine now you landed on the moon and you go, okay, cameras are on, guys, brilliant, let's go outside. And they go outside and they go, oh, hang on a minute, what's the problem? Well, there's some sort of space thing over there. Looks like the remnants of some sort of craft or something. Now, if you broadcast that live and they go, right, well, it's not, no one from Earth has been here, what does that now say? That now says, this is guaranteed physical proof of extraterrestrial life, and they've already been to the moon before us. Now everyone back at home is going pandemonium, absolute panic, hysteria, like, oh my god, we are not alone. It would be pandemonium. It would be crazy. So my belief is that they did go to the moon, they did achieve what they set out to achieve, but I do think that the footage that was broadcast to us, you know, the general members of the public, might not be what they actually filmed up there. It might not be as good quality. It might be very, you know, whatever. But they were there. But as a safety net, you know, like, we don't know. No one's ever been. We don't know what's going to be on the surface of that moon. So let's just create this footage here safely. This is great. Some pictures to send back home. Great, whatever. Really filmed in the Nevada desert, Area 51. And no one can ever go there and compare the surroundings. And if they did, they might turn and go, well, because, you know, surroundings don't change that much in 30 or 40 years. You know, yeah. Mountains, you know, of course, things do change a little bit, but not to any significant. So you've got a massive piece of evidence right there that they don't want you to go near. So what better thing to do than say it's a government testing area, you can't come here or go anywhere near it. So there was that. There was other elements as well, like they were saying that, like, literally, things like some of the light, there's crop marks on the photographs. So anybody that's a professional photographer will know that back in those days, you used to have crop marks that you could choose to have exposed on photographs. So they were crop marks where you could cut them and things like that. So it was like a little X mark. It's like this little cross. And when you look at some of the original photographs, you look at them, and they're amazing photographs. But when you look at them, those crop marks have actually gone behind the leg of the spaceship. And right. You kind of go, well, that wouldn't happen unless someone has manipulated this image in some way. You know, like, I do a lot of Photoshop stuff, so genuinely I could have you cuddled up next to Donald Trump, you know, eating pizza if I really wanted to, and it would be a really authentic looking photograph, you know. So loads of people do that sort of stuff now, you know, Photoshop is, you know, but back then, you know, it was doable, but certainly not by Joe Public. But so there's that. So there's lots of inconsistencies. And then there's this whole thing about Neil Armstrong. Buzz Aldrin became this spokesperson for the landing on the moon, the lunar landing.
Yeah.
Neil Armstrong became a recluse.
Right.
And lived on a ranch. Would never do interviews, would never talk to anybody, just became an absolute recluse. I think there's a couple of cases of the few times that people did try to get in contact with Neil Armstrong, he would just say, you're on private land, you know, and he'd have his rifle and it'd be that kind of a, you're on private land, you have to get off my land. Right. And that was it. And so you kind of sort of think, you know, it's just, there's a lot of things. And if it were, if someone did say, oh, yeah, like, listen, guys, we're coming clean, just to let you know, it wasn't the real footage we showed you, but we just didn't know what was going on up there. Do you know what I mean? I'd kind of go, yeah, no, I get it. I'd totally go, yeah, I totally get it. I understand, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, fine. Yeah. You know, so onwards and upwards.
I've got a question for you. Do you believe in aliens?
I think, yes, I do. And I do. I don't know what they are. I don't know what you know. Do I think they've been here? I don't know. The reason why I believe in them is I think that when you think of the universe, it is ever expanding. We discover new solar systems and planets. And, oh, there's another planet recently discovered. I can't remember. They called it a series of numbers and letters. I can't remember what it was. But they say it's very much like Earth. And when you see a picture of this sort of picture that they've managed to sort of get, it kind of does, it's got blue walls, you know, the sea, and it looks like the same, you know, and you sort of think to yourself, look, we've come about, I'm not particularly religious.
Is it flat like Earth?
It's just this flat coaster.
Yeah.
You know, that's not even a conspiracy theory to me. That is just absolute madness, right? You know what I mean? Flat. Is it like, come on, really? So I won't even entertain that as a conversation. But aliens is a really good one, because I think if you think about, like, we are still discovering things about ourselves, you know. Like they used to say, was it that the atom was the smallest thing known to man? And then they went, oh, no, actually, no, hold that. No, there is something even smaller.
Yeah.
And I think if we are still learning about ourselves, how can we profess to go, well, there's clearly nothing out there, but, you know, that just could never happen.
Yeah.
That could never, we can't. That's like me saying to you, 110%, I know right now in Edinburgh in Scotland, in a little cafe that I've never ever been to, someone didn't just spill a cup of coffee. You go, well, you can't say that. It's just, you're just making that up. And that's how I feel about this absolute certainty of there not being aliens. I think is a safety net. I think people go, oh, well, no, can you prove it? But you can't disprove it.
No,
and that's what I mean.
I'm the same as you. I think, you know, everything is so big. And to think that we are the only sort of planet with living things on it, I just find that harder to believe than we're not.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's just why us? Why just this one planet? If there's so many out there,
And wouldn't it be such a shame if this is as good as it gets?
Yeah.
Really? Oh God! You know, hopefully somewhere there's like really like galaxies and galaxies away that there are sort of people that just live in perfect harmony and just fly around on purple clouds and it's all amazing somewhere else, you know, and you kind of go, that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, like Dodo, the kid from outer space. Do you remember him?
Exactly. No, I'm thinking of, what am I thinking of? I'm thinking of like Avatar, where that's just a beautiful place to live.
Or the Jetsons.
The Jetsons. So yeah, there you go. That's proof in a way of aliens, really, isn't it? The Jetsons. So that's my, we can't cover it in this episode, but again, like I want to talk about ghosts as well.
Oh.
And I'll tell you why. Now that's a whole subject. Now I want to talk about ghosts. I want to talk about Ouija boards and contacting the spirit. Right. And I'll tell you why I want to talk about that. And this is a bit of a teaser for the next episode. And that is genuine. I think I must have told you the story about the seance that I did when I was about, I think, hang on, let me just work out my age. I would have been about early 20s of doing a seance in an old friend's house, a parent's house, back in like the early 90s. And it's a story I will tell in detail. I'll tell you exactly what happened, exactly how it was achieved, and I'll tell you about the strangest it was a joke. Essentially, I did a Ouija board as a joke many, many years ago. Just as but being a magician, I've got techniques to make pictures fall off the wall, for a vase to move across, a bookcase, and for you to be able to go and pick it up, and there's no strings or anything like that. And, you know, have a coin materialize, and this is true, a coin from 1874 materialize in the middle of a Ouija board. And I wasn't even near it, and everyone else had their fingers on the glass as it moved around the board. And then 20 years later, or about that, maybe 15, 20 years later, I was at a wedding. And an engagement party, and I was doing some magic just for friends, just for fun. And this young guy was there, and he said to me, he goes, that's amazing. He goes, like, do you believe in like that kind of stuff? And then he turned around and said something to me, which was absolute proof that it is possible to create urban myth and legend to a point where people will swear blind is a true story. And so I'll talk about that in the next one, because that's one for the evening. That's like a light your candles, get your whiskeys, and we'll do that one in the evening, because we're recording this in the morning because time's crazy.
I don't really know how I feel about ghosts. I honestly don't know whether I believe they exist or not.
See, I'm like you. I am more no than yes. I would say that I am literally 90. Again, another one as well. Remember this as well for the next episode, and that is when my great grandfather passed away.
Right.
I heard his voice right behind his passed, and we went back to the house. You know, it's all very somber and sad, and you're kind of reflecting on the passing of a loved one. And I remember sort of going to the toilet. It was my great grandmother's house. She had a, like, you know, the old houses, they have the toilet downstairs.
Yeah.
In England, it used to be a thing where, you know, the toilet and the bathroom would be downstairs at the back of the house.
Yeah.
You know, is a sort of, I don't know why, but that's how it used to be. Now we all have them upstairs in England. I know it's not the case everywhere, but and I remember going to the toilet, just saying to my mum, everyone was really quiet, and I remember being really young, that's what, 7 or 8 years old, and just saying to my mum, I need to go to the toilet. And she said, go in, darling, you know where it is. And I walked through, went into this toilet, and I just finished, you know, doing a little wee, and I remember just washing my hands at the sink and then just feeling this coldness on the back of my neck. And then my great-grandfather used to say, Marky. He'd go, hey, Marky. Hey, Marky. He was really sweet, lovely, lovely old man. And I remember hearing this, like, whispered in my ear. It was, honestly, and it sent shivers down my spine. And I remember walking into the room, and my mum and my great-nan was facing away from me, and my mum was facing me, and she sort of looked to see, like, you know, if I was all right. And she said, you were white. And I just looked at my mum, and I didn't, even being such a young kid, I knew I didn't want to say it because I didn't want to, it would have just upset people.
Yeah.
So my mum sort of looked at me and sort of mouthed, you know, like, and I went, I just sort of nodded sort of sheepishly and sort of went, I'll tell you later. Yeah. And then we didn't have a car back then, so we were on the bus going back home. And when we were on the bus, my mum said to me, are you all right? What's wrong? You looked funny when you came. And I just said, I heard great granddad's voice in the toilet. But then we'll save it for another episode. I'll tell you what I think happened in that moment and why I believe these things can happen and the sort of psychological
things. Let me tell you this, because this is exactly how I recall it. I'm honestly not making any of this up. This is my true memory. Okay.
Okay.
So you've got to imagine I had two brothers. Unfortunately, one of my brothers has passed away now. So I've still got one brother, but I've got three sisters as well. So me and my siblings grew up in a three bedroom house. So my mum and dad obviously had one bedroom. The three girls had one bedroom and the three boys had another bedroom. Now I'm the youngest in the family. So whenever we had a relative, because bearing in mind, like I said to you, my family was split all over the world. So my father's mum lived in Brazil with his sister, and you know, we were scattered all over the world. And what would happen is when relatives would come and stay, I would end up sharing a bed with my sister or my brother, or, you know, it wasn't an uncommon thing. So sure. If I was to wake up in the middle of the night and my sister would be sleeping in my bed, it wouldn't, do you know what I mean? It wouldn't be a weird thing at all.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, someone's coming to stay. Old Peter sleep in Corinda's bed today. Or
big Mediterranean family.
So this would happen. So I remember this and I remember it vividly. So, and this is my true memory. I haven't, to my knowledge, embellished it or anything else.
Okay.
So I remember being, I think I must have been about 8 or 9 years old at the time. And I remember waking up in my bed, sort of not, it's not morning time, so I haven't got up ready for school. But you know when you open your eyes and you're asleep. I've turned around and laying in my bed is my nan. So without thinking, and to me that wouldn't have been a weird thing, because all I thought was, oh, nan's here. Because for her to sort of, if she would have come over from Brazil and my mum and dad would have went, oh, go in, you know, Peter's bed or whatever, and he'll move in another bed tomorrow. So it wasn't a weird thing. We didn't have spare beds, you know.
Yeah.
So I woke up and I saw my nan. And then I turned around, went back to sleep. In the morning, woke up, nan's not there. Went downstairs. Everyone's in a very sort of somber mood. And I said, where's Nan? And this is my memory. And mum said, Nan died last night in Brazil. Now that to me was even saying it now, I'm getting shivers, because I actually saw her. Not I thought I saw her. I saw her. And in my mind, logically, I'm thinking, okay, so the pillow was creased in such a way, I'm half asleep. And that could quite possibly have happened. And that could quite possibly be the reason why I believed I saw her. And maybe I heard conversations in my sleep and I heard her name mentioned. That's why my mind told me I saw her and everything else. That's all very, very possible. But my recollection is I saw her in my bed and that was the night she died in Brazil.
Wow.
And so, that's okay. Absolutely true.
No,
and,
no, listen. I've got no reason to question you at all on any of that.
It is a strange one because you can
a question, right? Okay, so your beloved Nan, was she ill? Was it an unexpected passing, or was she ill?
She was old, and if she was ill, I wouldn't have known about it. It wasn't like, right. I don't think she died of an illness. I think she just died of old age. So it was a shock thing. It wasn't something that I was expecting. And the only thing I can put it down to, like if I'm thinking logically, is I just turned round and the pillow, you know, sometimes you wake up and you see things that aren't really there. That's what I can put it down to. And just some really weird, freaky coincidence. That it's Nan's face that come into my mind, and unfortunately she died that night. So that's the only sort of logical thing, because part of me thinks, well, it obviously wasn't Nan's ghost, but the other part's thinking, but it is a bit coincidental. But and that's why I'm sort of, you know, fighting against it, and I don't really know, because there are things we're over time already, so we're going to carry this on in the next episode, because I want to tell you, I've already told you actually, because I think I rang you when I left there, when I went to see a psychic.
Yes, you did. Oh God. Yeah, man.
So, remind me about that and I'll tell you about it.
God, we got about the next three episodes sorted in terms of content.
But
it's, so much got ghosts and, you know,
it is really weird. And, you know, that's why I'm torn whether I believe in them or not. If anything makes me doubt them, it is psychics.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I don't understand why, if my mum is trying to communicate with me, why she has to communicate in riddles. Why don't you just say, Peter, my lovely little mouse, what are you up to? Do you know what I mean?
Just
call my name or say something that at least know I'm going to know. Because
I agree.
If I was contacting you from the dead, I wouldn't sort of go, you know, ask you some weird question that you could not relate to me.
There's one word. It's like someone turning around, like a psychic saying, oh, okay, so I've got your friend Mark. I've got your friend Peter's here. Now, he's indicating something near his head. And it's like, in my head, I'm thinking, what's Peter doing? Like, charades? What's he doing? Do you know what I mean? So, I totally get your point.
And
it's
Peter's
just trying to tell Mark to be, you know, like, I love him, miss him.
Yeah.
And we should do a Wizard's Whiskey and Waffle.
Yeah, I'm sure there's one thing. If you went to a psychic, if I was no longer here, and you went to a psychic, and I was getting in contact with you, I'm sure there is one thing I could say. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure there's one thing I could say where you would go, well, that's really f***ing odd. Pardon my French.
But you got to beat that. Mark that for a beat.
Okay, let me just mark it. Boom. Right. So, but there would be something I could say that you would go, right, okay, how does she know that?
Oh, yeah, totally. You know what? I was just about to say backspinning in Vegas.
Yeah.
But there is actually documented evidence of backspinning in Vegas, and that's on Facebook and Instagram. Yeah. So there is something that they could get. So she said, oh, you're telling about backspinning in Vegas. And then you sort of go, oh, my God.
Well, I'll just throw this little one in because we're going to wrap up now. But when the psychic was speaking to me, apparently she was in contact with my father, who she could quite clearly see he's speaking with a Yorkshire accent. He's wearing his flat cap, and he worked in the mines or something. And anyone that knows my dad knows he's from Italy. He's Italian. He had a very thick Italian accent. And the last thing he would do is work down a mine. I mean, he was a gambler. He was out at casinos every night, always in a suit. You know, she couldn't have been further from the truth. Like, literally couldn't have been further from the truth. But I'll tell you some of the other things as well. And I don't want to ridicule her, because I honestly believe, and this is an interesting thing, I honestly believe she believes what she's doing.
Oh yeah, and also as well, you have to think of the motivation behind it. Now,
yeah.
I don't believe in psychics. You know, I don't believe anybody has got any psychic ability. But when I look at, it's a little bit like, you know, again, long topic, but it's a little bit like religion. I'm not particularly religious, but I understand religion. You know, I went to a very religious school. I've kind of sort of studied, you know, lightly most of the religions, you know, in one way or another, from the Islamic faith and to the Hinduism, to Sikhism, Buddhism, Christianity, and all that. I've covered a lot of those in our religious studies back in the day when I was at school. And I used to, for one reason or another, I used to kind of get on with it quite well. But it's like, for me, like religion, it's not something that I believe in, but I understand why it exists, and I understand why people like to have it. It's like a code of conduct, it's a way to live your life, it's guidelines, it's ethics, it's, yeah, you know, values and stuff like that. And I think a lot of the time, there's a psychic that Tessa told me about, my wife, and she said, this lady doesn't charge. She doesn't charge you any money, but you can go and speak to her, and the accuracy is unbelievable. Now, when you hear that sort of thing, you sort of think, well, okay, two things. First of all, she's not in it for financial gain, which I think when you get these phone lines, hey, phone up to find out about your future. $5. You know, you sort of think, right, this is clearly a way of making money from people that are searching for an answer. But so I do believe that there are some people that genuinely believe that they're psychic. And I think there are some people that absolutely know they're not psychic. And I think there are some people that do it solely for money and financial gain and fame and notoriety. And I think that there are some that do it because of the greater good. They actually feel that they're making a difference.
Yeah. And do you know what? I would say, and I think I said this to you after, because this is a big thing in the magic community, because magicians in general do not like psychics, do not agree with psychics, or do not agree with what they're doing. But I will tell you, when we went to see this psychic, and she was a really lovely, pleasant lady, I went in there obviously skeptical, like really skeptical, and I came out very skeptical. I mean, there was nothing that happened that night that would convince me that she was truly psychic. But the one thing, and I think I said it to you, there was only a few people there. There was me, Jenny, and there was about four other people. Now, the other people in the room obviously knew her to the point that they go regularly. Okay, she knew their name. And they knew her, and she was giving them readings. So they weren't stooges. They were people that just go, they believe in it, and, you know, she gives them readings. One of the people there was in a very bad emotional way, to the point, I would say, that they had considered maybe taking her own life.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so a really bad place he was in. So he wasn't, you know, sitting there acting this way, but from what she said to him, that was quite apparent that he was in a very bad way. And she spoke to him, she spoke to him about his mother, she gave him confidence. I saw it as like a counseling session. And he walked out of there feeling positive, feeling loved. And that, to me, even though part of me is going, yeah, but I don't believe it, I thought to myself, do you know what? She done him some good. She really done him some good.
And that's kind of, you know, it's like, you know, with religion, there are so many ways that I can sort of go on about, well, this is inaccurate, this doesn't make sense, this never happened, this, that, and the other. And you can really sort of break it down. But somebody that is a devout Christian, you know, I'm not going to change their mind, and it's not for me to change their mind. You know, if they ask me, you know, and they sort of, you know, want to, you know, hear all the ins and outs of everything, it's like, I have this thing, like, you know, I'm more than happy for people to practice their religions.
Yeah.
But don't preach to me about why I'm wrong for not doing it, because I promise you, I won't tell you why you might be sort of misinformed as to why you believe, and at the same time, so basically respect each other. You know, yeah. You respect my decision not to believe, and I respect yours to believe. And that's how I try and live, because the world's a big place. There's too many people believing in lots of different things, like that the earth is flat, which is a popular one at the moment. It's pretty on trend, the flat earth theory. But, you know, I just haven't got the time or the inclination, or really, why should you listen to what I think is right? You know, and I think I'm similar with you. I think to myself, if that guy has heard things, it's like when someone goes to a priest, it's no different. Yeah. You know, really, it's words of encouragement, words of comfort, words that might inspire, and words that might just motivate you a little bit more to just do this. And the same thing can be said for a counselor, a therapist, who really doesn't know you. They know your situation, and they know key words that will help you and give you guidance to go out and carry on trying, or carry on this, or whatever. And in, like you say, in a way, that's what she was doing with him.
Yeah.
Very briefly, I had an ex-girlfriend of mine, a lovely girl called Hannah. We're still friends. She's a friend of mine on Facebook, but lovely girl. Her mother, she lost her boyfriend years and years and years ago. And she went and saw a psychic, and she was really needing, she needed, he died of massive heart attack walking down the street, died in the street. They were on a sort of bit of a separation at the time, but they're still very much in love and that kind of thing. But so he passed away sort of where his folks live. And she really needed closure, and she was not a believer in psychics or anything. She went and saw a psychic, and this psychic, you know, said, oh, I see this, a gentleman, middle-aged, dark hair, and said these things. And she was telling me this. And in my head, I know some of the techniques that can be used to give the illusion of knowing more than we know, right? Yeah. So she was, and in my head, I'm dissecting it all, going, right, okay, well, you're middle-aged, you know, it's always sort of early 40s or however old she was back then. You know, this is, you know, so chances are he would have been, and brown hair, okay, there's not that many choices, you know. And then she sort of indicated a heart attack. Well, you know, heart attack is one of the biggest killers, and has been for God knows how long in sort of middle-aged men, you know, normally through obesity or drinking or, you know, whatever, you know, heart disease is a big one. So you're kind of batting, you know, balls in a safe area, if that makes sense. But I didn't say any of that, you know, and I could have if I wanted to, you know, but I didn't want to, I didn't need to, it wasn't the place to.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, it's just let her have that moment. If she feels that there was a moment of contact and she sleeps easier that night, then should I let her have that moment? And my argument is not with the people that go. My thing is not people who go and are seeking, because a lot of the time people that go to a psychic are searching for something. They need something. You know, they are in despair sometimes. And so I have no, you know, in moments of despair, we reach for comfort, and that's just human nature. So I don't have an issue with people that go to the psychic. It's just sometimes I would like to say to a psychic, like, do you really believe you're speaking to them and you've got contact, or are you doing therapy? Because my argument would be, look, your words were amazing. Like to that lady that you said, you know, that you saw, her words were encouraging. He left there in a much better place and this, that, and the other. I would say to her, why don't you become a real therapist instead of a pretend psychic?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Clearly, you've got a great connection with people and you can express things in a way where you can change this guy's dynamic and mindset to the point where he's leaving in a really positive light, you know?
Yeah.
Right. You know, like when people are going through tough times, I'm not a psychic, but, you know, anybody that listens to these podcasts knows that I can talk. But when people are going through troublesome times, you know, there's a few friends that have had some troubles along the way. And I'm more than happy to sit there and talk to them and encourage them and hopefully get them through that. And I think I have done sometimes. Yeah. I'm not psychic. I mean, I just talk and I just look at the world in a certain way where, I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe, my godfather died when he was 40 years old of a massive heart attack. I was in my early 20s early 20s. And I miss him desperately. I've missed him loads. Every single, you know, maybe a day or two goes by when you just get on with life. But so much of the time, I just, what would have Dave thought about this? Or what would Dave's reaction have been to this? And we're talking a long time ago that he passed.
Yeah.
My point of view is, I sort of don't think of Dave as, I'm never going to see Dave again. That's my reality. I will never see him again. It's impossible. I'm not going to go to heaven and see him or anything like that. That's my belief. What I've got though is I am thankful that I had someone in my life that connected with me for that short time that I can carry with me throughout my life, because his physical being is gone. And if you want to talk about spiritualism and stuff like that, I don't necessarily believe in spirits and that kind of thing either. But what I do believe is in that what we leave behind can live on in others. So yeah. For me, Dave lives on in me because he's always in my mind, is in things that I do. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, as you probably know. So, and that was Dave, was an absolute perfectionist. Yeah. He'd look at something and go, do you know what, I reckon I could, if I did that again, you know, I could do it better. And that's always how I think about things. I look at all the stuff that I've ever done and kind of go, yeah, if I could do it again, I think I could do it better. That's my belief. So I've got a different way of looking at life. I don't feel that I need religion or psychics or to believe in ghosts to still have a connection with the people that are no longer here. I just have, hold them deep in my heart is kind of where I, you know, and that's just my thing. So, you know, anyway.
Right.
Gone way over, but we'll talk about lots of things to talk about in the next episode. So sorry, guys, we did say it was going to be a short one. Sorry, Pete, I know you've got to run off and do that. I've got to run into the studio.
Right, we're going to go now, but shoot me over some dates and we can speak to Spiros, because I really want to get him on board with this, because I'm really interested in it. And then obviously he'll have his own take on whether he believes aliens exist. Right, so Mark, thank you so much for spending the time. I will speak to you soon.
All the best to everyone. Have a really good week.
Good stuff. Right, so that's it, guys. That was this week's podcast. I hope you really enjoyed it. We will hopefully be back next Tuesday. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to the Wizards Whiskey and Waffle Podcast with Peter Nardi and Mark Spellman. If you've enjoyed this episode, please be sure to rate and subscribe. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.